Tampering Resistance asks, what must we do to be effective? To stop the insanity, you can learn more at deepgreenresistance.org.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to another edition, yet another Technology Bites.
So many. You know, this marks, more or less, not knowing the actual date, the 19th anniversary of Technology Bites.
Happy birthday!
19 years. You'd think we'd have learned our lesson by now, but no. No, we have not learned our lesson. So, and Flicted certainly hasn't learned his lesson. He had one job. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're in here in the studio. Barrett is not here.
Where's Barrett?
He's in California. If you know where he lives, go take advantage.
Is he going to be a movie star?
No, I think he's going to be a Google star.
What?
I'm going to say, just look for the place with all the motorcycles.
He wants to, you know, get involved in a startup that will allow him to retire rich and buy all the motorcycles.
All of them.
All right. Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Yeah.
Oh. Didn't have me pot it up, Tom.
No, I did. But somebody had flipped it over from the A source to the B source.
The AB button.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And he's
Groove House.
Wow. I don't like flying in missing geek formation.
It's weird.
It is weird. Oh. Barrett is now he's off shopping the services that his company provides to the Googles.
Hmm.
So he's in, is it Cupertino? Is that what they
Mountain
like to
View.
Call it? Mountain View. Yeah, you know, it's in, you know, in that area, you go down there to where the Googles are, you get to see all the big boys.
That's right.
eBay's over there somewhere. It's
Jeff
all.
Bezos.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. We are, we're going to be broadcasting until 10 p.m. tonight, Central Standard Time, so you have that to look forward to. You can join us online. We hang out in the IRCs. IRC.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bytes. If you want to use your own IRC client, that would be awesome. But if you don't want to use your own IRC client, you can join us using the client that we publish on our website at geekradio.com. The IRC is a fun place to be. It's the show within a show. We have a handful of people that hang out with us and make commentary during the program.
You can curse in the IRC.
You can say all that you want to say,
although not really, because Jay will kick you.
Well,
depends who you say it about.
That's right. Well, you know, it's not, free speech doesn't apply to the IRC necessarily, but you do have the benefit of the fact that I'm probably not paying that much attention to the IRC, so you could probably get away with a lot for a long time before somebody says, "Hey Jay, you need to kick ban that guy." I haven't banned anybody in a long time, but I flicked it. Those last person I kicked. I like to just see if they have their auto rejoin turned on, and he didn't. So anyway, you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website where we keep all the informations, the podcast, the announcements for the upcoming Geek Gathering, which is a week from Friday, which will be...
A.K.A. the 4th of July.
Yeah, we're going to, you know, get our patriotism on and have a... I didn't see any reason to bump it or move it. If you're going out of town and that's the reason you're not coming to the Geek Gathering, that's fine. Go have a great 4th of July weekend. But we'll be hanging out, and I think you can see the downtown fireworks from cons, at least part of them.
You might be able to see
through
some
the trees
flashes or something.
You'll no, you said you can see them.
Oh, yeah.
But not, you know, like a full-on view,
right.
But you can see them. So we'll be hanging out there.
And or maybe somebody will bring a block of what? Is it sodium? That's one that if you put it in water, it explodes.
Hey. Sodium is salt. That wouldn't.
If you bring a slug, it'll maybe melt.
But I thought pure sodium, just
pure
NA.
Sodium,
or maybe it's magnesium.
I think magnesium might
maybe.
Do it.
Yeah.
Let's see, sodium and water. I think you just get the
salt
ocean.
Water. The ocean. The ocean called.
Actually, no. A huge chunk of sodium in pond. Yeah. So you're actually Pete's right. I think. Let's see. I'm looking at a YouTube video. It tells me that it will do. Well,
check Snopes.
That's very unexciting on this video. It does cause the water to boil or bubble. Let's see if this other YouTube video is more rewarding. You know, let's. Oh yeah, it does quite spark up. So you get a chunk of pure sodium and you stick it in water, and woohoo! 4th of July in a cup. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Where can you get that? Does it? Do you have to, like, you know? Is it controlled by
hobby shop?
Huh?
You can go down to the hobby shop.
Hobby shop?
Pick it up.
Get some sodium?
Yeah. Burn it up, whatever.
There used to be a store in Houston that sold...
The Salty Sailor?
Arr, matey.
Arr. You've got to be burning your fingers now. No, there used to be a store in Houston. I remember when I was in junior high or maybe grade school, I had read in a book about this cool science, a cool way to make a volcano. Because, you know, the default for any science project when you don't prepare,
yep,
is to make a volcano. But I had found in a book of, I remember this book, it was a book of science projects from like the 1950s or something. And it talked about this substance you could get. And I can't remember.
Involved like a quarter stick of TNT?
No. I can't remember what the stuff is called, but it's this powdered stuff and you put it, you light it, and it sparks and flames, and it creates ash. So, like, you put this in your model volcano, and you touch a match to it, And then it sparks start shooting out of your volcano, and ash starts rolling down the side of your volcano. So I got.
And then the fire department comes.
But you could go to there's, and I had to find a place to buy this chemical. So I was like, okay, I need, and whatever it was, this chemical. And there was a shop in Houston that was like some kind of chemical supply store, and you could go in there, and they actually had this stuff, like in a jar, and it had, with all of its warnings and stuff, and you could go in there, in with an adult, and buy it. And I had the jar of the stuff, and it was just, it was fantastic. You know, I got a good grade on my science project and amused myself to no end burning up this jar.
And nine fingers.
I still have all my
fingers. Oh, you still have them all? Okay.
Yeah. But it was so much fun. But maybe I can find some of that for the 4th of July. I don't know if it, what the, I mean, I don't even know. This store can't possibly still be in existence. It's kind of like the EPO of chemicals. So, I don't know. I have to research and find out.
Some chemistry professor, retired chemistry professor, was working there probably.
Yeah, it's probably some, you know, burned out high school chemistry teacher said, you know, I'm just going to sell this stuff. But I...
Then he found out he got cancer and he needed to save money for his family.
I totally whipped these, what was the other stuff, that you would put the vinegar inside of the baking soda? That guy's volcano. It was smoke.
Foaming
volcano. So, ha. Huh. All right. So, if you want to be on the air with us a little bit later on, we will be taking your calls at 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, what do we got? Smiling Bob is here. He knows. He has the answer. What? I can't hear you. Speak up.
He wants to answer the phones just for old time's sake?
I don't know what he's... What is he saying? What?
He's not saying anything.
What are you...
What is it? What you got for us?
Do you know
the name of the store?
The book was all about science. They all about books.
All about books. It might have been. I don't have that good
recipe for that.
Yeah.
Like a photo studio.
Yeah, it had. Well, Smiling Bob knows what I'm talking about. All right. So 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us a little bit later on, we will be taking your phone calls and talking to you about computers and technology. So you have that to look forward to. But first, we're going to go to San Antonio because Pete didn't drive into Houston. Bastard. For the Technology Bites Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, sign of the times on the way technology is becoming more mainstream, or geekery is becoming more mainstream. The top two stories tonight are from the Supreme Court of all places, and they are technology related things, and not just indirectly technology related. The one of the bigger ones on a civil liberties perspective is the Supreme Court unanimously, all nine justices, declared that warrants are necessary to search your cell phone. Previously, when police arrested individuals, officers were allowed to seize items on the person or nearby as evidence. With the ruling, law enforcement can inspect the outside of the phone. You know, they can look at it, but none of the information within it unless they obtain a warrant. The ruling comes as the court heard arguments on two cases in the U.S. where police used cell phones to gain evidence. In both cases, law enforcement used the information in the phones to lead to bigger arrests involving drugs and firearms. Tying the parties to selling drugs, felony possession, and a drive-by shooting with the information obtained in the warrantless search of the cell phones was used in the conviction of two individuals. In the two cases, both were sentenced to more than 15 years in prison. You know, they in their decision, Chief Justice John Roberts said, "We cannot deny that our decision today will have an impact on the ability of law enforcement to combat crime. Cell phones have become important tools in facilitating coordination and communication among members of criminal enterprises and can provide valuable incriminating information about dangerous criminals. Privacy comes at a cost," which, you know, it's about time they kind of figured some of those things out. So there's that. So next time if you get pulled over and the cop is wanting to look through your cell phone, you know, because we've talked about this over the years. I mean, there were stories, and they've been on the info shot in the past, where the police had a device where they'd take your cell phone and essentially, you know, plug it in and pull all the data off of it. And now the Supreme Court has, I think wisely, said that's a no-go, not without a warrant. And the other case is more interesting, and I think, you know, obviously I'm not one of the top legal minds in the country or anything like that, but I kind of wonder if they got it wrong. There's a case about Aereo, which we've talked about on the show. You heard Dwight talk about it. It was the one that did live television where you essentially – they had little antennas, individual antennas for each customer that were tied to a DVR, and then that one customer could access their DVR or watch live television over the internet. And the Supreme Court basically ruled that it violated the copyrights of the local broadcasters of the CBS and NBC, etc., for their product, and said that it was kind of like being a cable. They said it was like being a cable company. The part I don't understand is, and so the Supreme Court said that they were violating the copyrights of, you know, broadcasters. The thing that I wonder about is, okay, so one antenna, one DVR, and putting it over the internet. If you personally have a DVR hooked up and you use an antenna and you watch that with your, you know, iPad or your phone or whatever, is that now illegal? I mean, basically you're doing exactly the same thing as Aereo. I guess the tough part is they can't catch you because they have a hard time figuring out that you were doing it. But isn't it, you know, what about an apartment building that has a big antenna that they're sharing amongst all the people in that apartment complex? Are they violating the, you know, rules of the copyrights of the broadcasters? It's really it seems kind of odd. The justices who voted against it, if you know anything about my politics, are not the justices that I would find myself on the same side with usually. But it's very odd. It sounds like Aereo is pretty much toast by this, because they can't really, you know, they claimed that Aereo was playing fast and loose with things to be a copyright infringer. And it's sort of like, I don't know, renting antennas and cables doesn't seem to me to be that big a stretch. Anyways, so now on other stuff, Google's I/O conference happened today. And so there's a lot of stuff that I found a place that has a list of all the stuff they announced at Google I/O 2014. They kicked things off with the announcement of the Android One program to provide guidelines for a unified Android experience for people creating smartphones for the developing market. This allows Google to dictate the minimum hardware requirements for manufacturers around the world. That's the first device is going to arrive in India brands like Micromax and Carbon, starting at less than $100. The Android upcoming L release preview was out. Features a new new cross-platform UI called Material Design, which offers app developers more precise tools to make customized typography, grid, and color changes. Material Design also allows designers to add smooth animations at 60 frames per second using Polymer, a prototyping tool. Google's added a guideline that'll help designers build consistent look and feel. L's preview teases lock screen notifications and context-based authentication features. For example, if you're wearing a paired Bluetooth watch while using your phone, it won't prompt you for a pattern lock pass. You know, so that it's got more context to understanding what's going on. Google touts L's enhanced art performance, 64-bit compatibility, and a new Android extension pack to support 3D graphics. To help developers learn more about battery life, Google also showed off Project Volta to help identify battery discharge patterns and to improve overall power consumption. Finally, there should be more security, such as new patches for Google Play services and factory reset protection. And then probably the biggest one that got covered the most, talked about the most, Google demonstrated its Android Wear SDK to show off select Android wearable functionalities. The touchscreen UI lets users swipe across Google Now cards and supported apps from the paired smartphone. And users can use the OK Google prompt to create notes, reminders, alarms, calls, and more. A material design from, you know, the L is also present in this wearable platform. When a user installs an app from the Play Store on their phone, a wearable counterpart is also installed on the smartwatch that's paired with it, so the features are immediately synced. So that's kind of cool. So you don't have to worry about having, you know, about having to separately keep synced up between the two. A couple of products are out. The LG G Watch is available today in the Play Store. Samsung Gear Live is available in the Play Store, and then the Moto 360 is coming later this summer. Then there's Android Auto, completely voice-enabled Android Auto designed to help developers create a safe and seamless solution for using connected devices while driving by connecting the smartphone to a compatible car. The Android Auto UI will cast on the car's screen with quick shortcuts to location searches, suggestions, and navigation. Drivers can also send and receive text messages using voice command features to keep their hands and hands on the wheel and their eyes on the road. To cap it all, Google announced the Android Auto SDK that supports streaming radio and messaging services. The Android Auto release will be available later this year with 40 partners, including Hyundai, Porsche, Acura, and more. And then on, they did. There's a TV. Android TV. Google combined all things entertainment into one with Android TV, which lets users watch live TV or stream content while adding a fluid search experience, which provides information like cast info and related YouTube clips. Users can employ the remote control, D-pad, or their smartwatch as a control option. Android TV also adds a gaming experience, enabling users to bring Play Store games to the big screen. Users can cast content. When I say cast, that's using the Chromecast from their Android devices to the Android TV, just like a Chromecast. And they did update the Chromecast. You don't have to be on the same Wi-Fi network to cast content to Chromecast. Users can search for nearby devices and connect via the cloud. If Chromecast does not recognize you in the area, it will ask for a PIN. This is an opt-in feature and it's going to roll out later this year. Google also added a backdrop feature to allow background photo customization that draws photos from your library. Android apps are now coming to Chromebook. Just like the new L update that allows users to unlock their phone if using context and location, Chromebooks can also be unlocked if you have your phone with you. That's kind of nice. In addition, Android will be able to send notifications straight to the Chromebook for a continuous experience. Google announced Android for Work, a program to help applications live in one place. This allows native Microsoft Office editing in Google Docs as well. There's also a premium Google Drive offering for enterprise customers, which allows unlimited storage for $10 per user per month. So that's pretty good. Google Cloud, they demoed some improvements to Google Cloud and touted apps that use the infrastructure site like Snapchat Secret. Let's see, they also demoed Cloud Data Flow, which lets you create data pipelines for ingesting large data sets. And there's just a couple more. Google Fit, they previewed the Google Fit platform, an open multi-OS API for fitness apps and devices. Much like Apple's recently announced HealthKit, Google Fit aggregates all the users' fitness data into one place. That's, they're working with Nike, Adidas, and others with, for that. And Google Play shows off the game's profile feature, saved game section that shows a screen cap of your game progress, leaderboards, and quests so gamers can set goals. Google also announced that users can set up direct carrier billing for tablets so they can charge everything in one place. That's on the Google Play part. The bonus was a protester interrupting the presentation, calling attention to an eviction complaint related to Google's head of e-discovery, Jack Halperin. She was promptly escorted out, but not without making things rather awkward. Then there was a second protester that was a lot less clear what they were complaining about, who shouted, quote, "You're all involved with a company that builds robots to kill people." it's not quite as crisp as Soylent Green is, people, but, you know. The complaint's thought to be related to the company's recent acquisition of Boston Dynamics, which makes military-grade robots. So there was that. And then this one, I, you know, didn't get on the list of stuff from and maybe because it's kind of deeper geekery. If you use Gmail, if you're a developer type and you've used stuff with email, a lot of people have been wondering if there'd be a better way to access data to build apps that integrate with Gmail. You know, there's IMAP, but, you know, which does great for what it was designed for, you know, connecting email clients to email servers in a standard way. It wasn't really designed to do all the cool things that you might have been working on. So one of the things is that Google's announced the beta of a new Gmail API. It lets you easily deliver Gmail-enabled features. It's a standard Google API, which gives RESTful access to a user's mailbox under OAuth 2.0 authorization. If you don't know what any of those things are, then this probably is not the story for you. It supports CRUD operations on true Gmail data types, such as messages, threads, labels, and drafts. You make HTTPS calls and get your responses in JSON, XML, or Google protobuf formats. You can also make these calls from standard web languages like Java and Python without using a TCP socket, which means the API is accessible for many cloud environments that couldn't support IMAP. In contrast to IMAP, which requires access to all of a user's messages for all operations, the new API gives fine-grained control to a user's mailbox. For example, if your app only needs to send mail on behalf of a user and doesn't need to read it, you can limit the permission request to send only. So that's cool. You can it will let you query the inbox change history, so you can avoid the need to do archaeology to figure out, you know, what messages have been read and stuff or what's been changed. Finally, the last benefit is speed. While there's still some tuning to be done because this is a beta, Google's tests and feedback from pre-release developers suggest that the new Gmail API is delivering dramatic performance improvements over IMAP for web application use cases. You can, I would say, Google that one, you know, Gmail API, if there's some things in using this that you're interested in. And then lastly, a couple of Apple rumory things, because there's not, you know, Apple had their big event recently. Now we get rumors until probably around, I'm thinking psychically, probably around September 19th, according to rumors from Chinese web portal Tencent. Citing inside sources, they say Apple will look to launch the 4.7-inch version of the iPhone 6 on Friday, September 19th. The news comes after German carrier Deutsche Telekom was reported to be informing customers of a similar release date for the device. The report also notes that Apple will launch a 32-gig and 64-gig capacity of the phone, indicating that Apple may launch the iPhone 6 without a 16-gig model. So that's a change. September launch would be consistent with the past two iPhone launches, as Apple also typically launches new products on a Friday. A report from Bloomberg earlier this week also claimed that Apple may launch the larger 5.5-inch version of the iPhone 6 and the 4.7-inch version simultaneously, with previous reports indicating that issues with battery and display technology would hold up the bigger one's launch. In addition to the larger display, the iPhone 6 is expected to feature a thinner design, faster processor, the A8 processor, and more. It's supposed to have an improved camera, with the larger 5.5-inch version exclusively utilizing optical image stabilization, and the smaller device featuring an advanced lens module. So there's, you know, obviously the rumors, there's a couple more months for them to shake and bake, but I mean, we've got to be running out of, short of somebody showing a picture of the actual thing, we're kind of running out of road. The other one that goes with rumors that have been reported going along, supposedly Apple is going to begin manufacturing a 12-inch MacBook Air notebook in the third quarter. A new report via the sometimes accurate Digitimes claims that Apple's supply partners will begin production of an anticipated 12-inch MacBook Air sometime in the third quarter of this year. The current estimate points towards July, and Apple's apparently planning to stick with the current MacBook Air design with only minor unseen tweaks to rearrange certain internal structures and accommodate an adequately sized battery. If it's true, the timing is consistent with predictions released from Ming-Chi Kuo, who has a strong track record in forecasting Apple's hardware releases. He had stated in April that he expected Apple to launch a 12-inch Air toward the middle or end of the third quarter. Kuo believes the new model will be a combination of the 11-inch MacBook Air's portability and the 13-inch's performance. He also noted that the 12-inch thin and light could be the first MacBook Air model to have a Retina-quality display. So that's the only reason that would get it to be that would be a big step, is to have that kind of display on a MacBook Air, or else this rumor would be just kind of semi interesting stuff about upcoming laptops, which has to rise to a certain level to be worth reporting. I'm Peter Hughes, and that is the Technology Bytes InfoShot news.
What is that strange noise that sounds? It sounds like we're in a blimp.
Pete's flying at 30,000 feet.
I think I think Pete's playing World of Warcraft, and that's the background noise.
Or is the internet is down?
There's no. I don't know what it is. I mean, I hear it too, but there's nothing. It's silent around me. I'm not in the middle of some kind of.
If you plot him all the way down, does it go away? Yep. Huh. It's a nice little hum.
The AC central.
Wow, 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 wow. So,
weird.
I don't know. Seems very odd.
Yeah, I hear it.
It sounds like a big table vibrating. That's what it sounds like. I can't tell. All right, we'll deal with it. We always do. There's always something here on Technology Bytes. So I found it. The chemical I was talking about is ammonium dichromate.
Okay.
And if you Google search ammonium dichromate on YouTube, you can see it in action. It's fantastic stuff. Fantastic. And I think you can buy it off of Amazon. So, y'all, you kids have fun now.
He told me to
do it.
Do not attempt this at home.
Listeners should be aware that the following program
may contain dangerous stunts you can perform in your own home
that we do not recommend.
I don't know. It looks mostly harmless. You know, fire. How bad can it be? All right. Well, we are inviting you to call in now at 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. 713-526-KPFT.
I wonder if it's the same thing that they make the little compressed tablets from that you light that make the snakes.
I don't know. Don't know. Could be. But I don't know how you would force this. If you look at the video, which you can look at. No, you can't look at it. It's more of a powder.
I look at it, all of our listeners listen to it.
Yeah. You can turn the volume down on the YouTube video itself.
That's true.
There is a volume control on there. But the bandwidth might cause Pete to fall offline. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bytes, we'd be happy to talk to you. That's what we're here for, celebrating 19 years of tech support on the air. We look forward to talking to you. We do have one person on the line, so that's awesome. If you want to get in the queue, all the other lines are open, so dial right in, and Groovehouse will put you in the queue. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up first?
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Dave.
Dave, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yeah, if this phone starts beeping, it's because the battery went dead. Anyway, I'm going to be real quick. I'll just ask the question, and then if it get cut off, then I'll just listen.
Okay.
I'm with AT&T, got four TVs. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, got four TVs. I want to dump AT&T and go to, like, Hulu and Netflix and those other things. What kind of equipment do I need, and how do I get it on all four TVs?
Well, you buy four TVs that have Netflix and Hulu apps built into them would be one way to do it.
Okay, we got all old TVs.
All old TVs. So you could get Roku boxes for each TV.
Roku, Chromecast, maybe, if you have the right connection. Apple TV.
Apple TV doesn't have the Hulu app. It only has, I don't even think it has Netflix, does it?
It has Netflix.
That's weird.
MSA.
Oh, I think he hung up. Dave hung up.
No, I'm still here.
There he is. Okay. So
I don't know what's doing that.
The Roku box is an internet connected device that will allow you to stream internet content to your computer. So it connects to all the major services like Hulu and Netflix and so forth. And they're not terribly expensive. The Apple TV is another one that does some of them.
It does Netflix. It has some other stuff. I don't think it has. I don't remember. I never use Hulu, so I don't know.
The only problem that you might... Well, you probably won't even hit this. I know it uses a lot of bandwidth. So if you had all four TVs streaming at the same time, you might have some playback issues, and you might also exceed... You have Comcast, or do you have AT&T?
I have AT&T, but I want to get rid of them.
Who do you have for internet access?
Yeah, it's AT&T.
So if you get rid of them, you're going to go to who?
That was my question. I don't know what to do. I guess I have to have internet from somebody, I guess.
Yes, you do. Absolutely. In order to access the internet, you have to have connectivity to the internet. So you would have to, and you would need somebody who provides broadband. So your two choices really end up being AT&T or Comcast.
If you're in the East. Wrong answers. That's what I was hoping you wouldn't say.
Well, I mean, if you do any research at all, you'll see that there are only two major broadband providers. And there is satellite or dish TV, but they will provide internet access, but it's not as good. Satellite internet is not as reliable, and they have serious data caps on satellite TV.
You can find other companies that either sell or resell Comcast or AT&T.
I think you're going to get reselling Comcast.
But they're not as cheap. I don't know if Speakeasy is still around, but they sold
DSL,
broadband services.
Yeah.
And there were other companies, but they're generally not going to be as cheap as the two big ones.
So it sounds like I'm going to have to still get the internet service and then buy something for each TV.
Well, yeah, if you want to use your existing TVs, that's true.
Okay. And that's what I was kind of thinking. That's four Hulu boxes or four Roku boxes or...
Mm-hmm. And unless you have HDMI, they run somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 100 bucks, depending on what one you buy.
Now, are your TVs, do they have HDMI, or how are you going to get... The other question is going to be how you're going to get signal to the TV from the Roku box.
Well, see, they're all old. None of them have HDMI on them. Maybe one does.
Do they have coax, at least, for, like, cable?
Yeah, they have the coax.
So right now
we're doing AT&T, and I think they give you a box, and then it goes to the... There's a wire running to the TV.
Right. It's going to be a coax cable. So I believe Roku, I haven't played with it, but I believe Roku has coax connectivity. I'll have to Google that real quick. But
I still have to wind up with four boxes for each TV.
Well, you need one box for each TV. So if you have four TVs, that'd be four Roku boxes.
Or you could get four computers with TV tuner cards.
That would be another way. You could get four cheap computers, but by the time you go through all that hassle, the Roku is going to be a better deal. So you're looking at...
Chromecast uses HDMI. Chromecast is cheap, but it uses HDMI.
My whole idea was to get rid of AT&T. I guess I got stuck with them.
Well, you know, if you don't care about all the streaming content, there's still broadcast television.
Yeah, you can make your own HDMI antenna, or not HDMI antenna, but high def HD TV antenna.
You can buy a cheap one. Another option you could do.
I've built a couple, and they work really well. I've got, like, you know, 70 channels, of which 45 are in another language.
Yeah,
20 more are religious.
Yeah, the other thing you could do is you could set up a computer that was a media device and connect it to, and then actually
centrally located.
But you still have to get the content to the TVs. And the problem you have here is that you have these old TVs that, you know, they don't have any. It's like my TV is wireless, and it has an app on it that allows me to, I can stream videos and stuff that I have stored on my computer to the TV. And any of the TVs that have this capability could all connect to that server. So I can watch the videos on my tablets or on my TV or on my computer. And so all that works. So if you really wanted to get away from AT&T and Comcast and so forth, you'd and do it smoothly, you would be looking at an upgrade for all of your equipment and all your TVs. And so you're going to spend a lot of money up front, but it could be, a, you know, it depends on what the reason is that you're trying to get away. If you're trying to save money, you have to spend a little bit of money right now.
Yeah, that, it
looks
that
like
was,
all
that
the Roku
one,
boxes are HDMI.
One objective is just, you know, to cut the cable bill
right.
to a degree, but it doesn't look like it's going to work immediately. Okay, yeah, that's kind of bad news for me, I guess.
Plan B is you get a couple radios and a Mr. Microphone and start making your own programming.
Start Sweden movies.
Or you get rid of the TVs and just replace them. You know, just you could just use tablets to watch your video content.
She's not going to go for that. She likes a TV to sit in front of.
Just get
me,
one.
I don't watch much of it, so I don't really care.
Do you need four TVs?
She has one in my office, one in the bedroom, one in the front room, and one in the kitchen. And the one in my office I don't care about, so I could probably work it down to three. But the other three we do watch constantly, pretty much all day at some point.
Well, I know that the smart TVs are coming down in price. And if you get a TV that has the capability built in to connect to your Wi-Fi network, then it gets a lot easier to stream content to. My TV has the Netflix app built into it. So I can, you know, as long as it's connected to the internet, I can bring up Netflix and watch Netflix on it, no problem.
I've got an Apple TV which can do Netflix, but I've also have a Blu-ray player that can do Netflix and Pandora and some other stuff. And before that, I had a different Blu-ray or DVD player that had built-in Netflix and some other functionality. It's getting pretty common nowadays where any kind of media player, even physical media like Blu-ray or DVD, will actually have the ability to hook up to the internet to download software updates, firmware updates, but also to be able to have an interface to access online content.
If you had a TV that had all that capability, a brand new one, then all you would need to do is just get the internet cable into the back of that TV, and then you'd be...
You could do that, or the TV, if the TV has wireless, it could just connect to your Wi-Fi hotspot.
And then how would you get it to the other TVs?
That's the problem. Each TV has to be connected to a device that will deliver the content to it. And that's what your cable service provides, or what UVerse provides, is, you know, a set-top box that delivers the content to the TV. So right now you've got four TVs, and they're all connected with their own individual box, right?
We have two boxes, and I think you can hook two TVs per box.
But you're wired. You have two TVs wired to one box, and the other two TVs wired to another box.
Correct.
And so each of the two TVs, can they watch separate channels if they're connected to the same box? They can.
Yeah, they're all independent.
It's kind of interesting.
Watch whatever you want to watch on them.
Well, if you got
one has an Ethernet cable, and I think the other ones are coax. The other three are coax.
Well, you know, you're looking at some money to spend if you wanted to make this happen, you know. So I don't know that you can do it cheaper than what you're doing it for through AT&T or through Comcast. I know with basic cable service, you know, you can get like up to three or four TVs connected, no problem. And but, you know, you have to keep researching and see what you're willing to pay for. If you don't want to pay the money to AT&T or Comcast, then you may have to pay it to the manufacturer of a new TV and consider going that route. But you could conceivably. Now, Pete, did you say you found out that Roku does not support coax?
I went to their site and looked at the ones that they're currently offering, and they're all HDMI on the back.
They have no coax. That seems kind of odd.
I guess we have to up. Yep.
Well, they're little. They're tiny, though, you know, so there's not a lot of room on the back for all the hardware for that stuff.
I'm trying
to... Yeah,
you answered a lot of my questions, because I was thinking it looks like there's going to be a box for each TV or upgrade each TV.
Well, and beyond that,
I hear you all talking about it and other people calling in on it, but I'm just thinking, how would that work for me?
Beyond that, it looks like the Roku will not connect to your current television. There might be an adapter that will convert HDMI to coax, though.
Or if it has the RCA, you know, is that like single, the single jack, the composite video RCA? It's like the stereo plug, but there's only one, the yellow one.
The yellow
usually
one, yeah.
It'll do that. So if the TV has that input, you could make that work.
Okay, or we could probably do a separate fundraiser just for me.
Yeah, that'll happen. All right, Dave. Well, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Oh, I guess I have to drop now.
There's no Barrett.
I'm the Barrett.
You're the Barrett.
I'm the Barrett. Not the baby. Not the father. All right. Good. We got more calls in the queue. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT.
Somewhere in California, Barrett just instinctively hung up on somebody and doesn't know why.
After dropping his phone. All right, Grew House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with James.
James, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. What's happening, man?
What's going on?
Well, I'm looking to back up my hard drive with an external hard drive. I have a Western Digi. And I was looking at a couple programs and looked at one Paragon, and this other one was wondering, you know, something free I can just download and schedule so I can, you know, back it up automatically and not try to sit here and try to transfer files over, you know. So I was wondering which one you guys might suggest. The Paragon, it says complete backup that can do the operating system and everything, and I was wondering, is that like ghosting or...
Well, what they do is, I'm not familiar with Paragon, but for example, Microsoft Backup if you're using Microsoft computers, and the built-in backup utility is not bad, because you can actually back up your files and even your entire operating system to a backup file, which once you then get the computer back up and running, then you can use Microsoft Backup to reach to the backup files and pull back the data that you need, or even restore the operating system back to the way it was.
Yeah, but that would mean that I'd be running 7 or above, right? And I'm still on XP right
now. No, XP has backup built into it as well. Hey. Microsoft Backup has been included with the operating system since at least 95, if not before. But there are other utilities. I've been using an Apple with the Time Machine backup here mostly for my needs. And a lot of backup softwares are trying to push people to backing stuff up online. But I know Acronis is one that is a good backup. I don't know if there's any good free backup programs except for what's built in. But Acronis makes a backup software, Acronis True Image. And I'm trying to see if that actually backs up to a hard drive, or if that backs up to, personal backup, disk management, Acronis True Image. It's not terribly expensive, and I think they offer you a free trial. Trying to see. Yeah, they do offer a free trial to see if you like it or if it's something that you want to use. But Acronis is a real popular. They do have cloud backups, but I think they'll also back up to a physical drive. What are you trying to back up? I mean, you have XP you've never backed up before. What's inspired you to start considering?
Well, I've backed it up. I've been doing backups, but what I've been doing, the software that I used a while back is that it had come with the Western Digi, and it expired, right?
It came with what?
With the Western Digital external hard drive. I think it's like 750 gig hard drive. It's an old one. And that's not it. Memo auto backup. No, Mimeo automatic backup. And it expired, so I can't use it anymore. It kind of sucked anyway.
Right.
You know? So I've been just, all the files I know I need to back up, I've been doing that manually. And that takes forever, you know?
Right. Now, you want something that automates the backup process. There is a... I'm just looking online to see what there are actually some free backup programs out there that exist that look like they're pretty highly rated. There's one called There's one called AOMEI Backupper. There's one, EASUS, Toto Backup Free. I've used EASUS software for doing file recovery. But take a look at, if you do a Google search on free backup software, the first link you come to is TechRadar, which is a reputable site, and they have 11 backup programs that they recommend, and they review each one and tell you about the capabilities of each of the software. So that might be something to look into.
Okay. Okay. So the first one, Google, I'm on Bing, that's why. Okay, I'll do that. I'll definitely do that.
Yeah, there's some good options there, and you could play with them and see what you like. And now that I'm looking, there are tons of free. Paragon has a free version of their software, and they seem to be fairly highly rated too. So, well, they offer free download. I don't know if it's free for the capabilities, but I would definitely try out the trials and see if you like the features and if they're going to do what you want to do.
Sounds good. What about the Microsoft Backup? Where do I find that? I mean, looking here, it said Microsoft Backup should come with the...
It should be built into XP. It says if you, how to install the... Okay, before you can back up important information on your computer, you must install the backup utility. So it's included with the Windows XP Home Edition CD if you have Home Edition.
And I got XP Professional.
All right, so let's see.
I don't remember putting it on. I don't remember that option. I don't know.
Well, it says, let's see, how to use backup to protect data, blah, blah, blah. Use Windows to back up your computer. If you Google it, you'll find it. It's part of XP. You don't even have to I don't even think you have to install anything, but if you Google it, The internet is your oyster. It has all the information out there. And XP, as far as I know, has a built-in backup or something that you can pull off of the install CD.
Okay.
All right. They got some things to go looking for. Appreciate your call.
Appreciate it.
All right. Bye. All right. Ooh, I barreted him. Sorry about that. 713-526-5738. We are... We still got plenty of time in the first hour, and we got a whole another hour after the break to take these calls. If you want to be on the air, if you have a suggestion for backup software or something you like to use in the Windows environment, you can let us know. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Carlos.
Carlos, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, yes. I guess I'll add one more backup plan to the pile that you've already given. This one, I'm not sure if it might be a little bit different from the others. It's called Crash Plan. And if you have two places, two different geographic locations where you have computers that are connected to the internet, you can install the software and have backups running of each. That way, you know, if you've got your backup drive sitting right next to the computer and something happens there at the house, gets stolen or whatever, you've lost everything. But if you're using this crash plan, then you've got the separate geographic location that you've got all your data at. And that's free if you're doing it that way. They do charge if you're backing up to the cloud, but it's free if you back up to your other PC.
Have you used it? Have you used it now?
I have not used it myself, so maybe he can use it and then tell me.
Well, I was looking at it's at code42.com, code42.com/crashplan, and they do offer free local backups, free off-site backups, which basically backs up to the cloud. And I don't know how much free, usually when anybody offers free cloud backup, it's a limited amount of space.
Yeah.
And you have to upgrade if you want to get more data to be able to store it online. But cloud backups are kind of cool because, like you mentioned, if something happens to your computer and your hard drives at your desk, like your house catches on fire or gets flooded, then your backups are no good because they've also been destroyed along with your computer. So keeping an off-site backup of your data can be worthwhile. There are also external hard drives that are sold as being disaster-proof. They're fireproof. They're waterproof. They'll there are hard drives out there that'll let you do that. So
yeah, not theft proof though.
No, not theft proof. That's true. If it's heavy enough to where the thief may not want to really steal it.
It's like an old piece of junk. Yeah, they need to design it to look like an old piece of you know what that nobody wants to steal.
Right, or just you know. Get a wireless backup or get some kind of Ethernet backup that you can hide in a closet or something.
There you go. All right. So the original reason that I called was I was having some trouble, some HDMI problems. Okay, so I've got an Asus laptop that I've used at the house, and I've connected it via HDMI to my Sanyo television set. It works fine. I get video and audio playing through it. Then I took that laptop to actually my church, where in the foyer we want to be able to play some videos off my laptop to show it on the big screen. Couldn't get the audio to work on it. Couldn't even get apparently the software to recognize that there's supposed to be a separate audio source.
Most projectors will connect to your VGA port and allow you to project or show what's on your screen onto the projector, but it will not take the sound unless you bring the audio out and plug that if the projector or the they have a sound system or something to be able to play the audio.
Yeah, actually it's going to an Action Tech box, which I guess is something like a Sling box, I'm not sure, but it connects with the Action Tech box, and then the Action Tech box sends out the signal to the receivers, which plays on the other televisions. And we know that works because we run a camera to it, and that works, but I want to, you know... How's the camera connected to it? HDMI.
Okay, so the HDMI delivers audio and video information.
Right.
So does your laptop that you're using, does it have HDMI?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So if you plug the HDMI from the laptop into this device, you say you are getting video, but you're not getting any audio?
Correct.
But he did at his house.
But he did
at his house. So the laptop can output HDMI audio and video.
Right.
But the thing is, not all devices... will actually do HDMI audio.
But the
sure.
So the camera that you have connected using HDMI, is it delivering any sound over the system, or is it just video?
It's delivering sound as well. So, yeah, in fact, they have a XLR mic on it, and it's sending out sound. And you know what? I just thought of something. At the house, I think I actually was going from mini port out to HDMI onto the TV.
That might be a difference. You might have to play with the audio output settings and tell the computer where it's wanting to send the sound. Listen, we're coming up on the top of the hour. If you want to hang on, we can talk to you after we do the station break, or we can just move on.
Well, I'm going to experiment here a little bit, and maybe I'll call back. Thanks.
All right, thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, that music playing in the background tells me that we... are you going to take a short break? So we're going to go away for a few minutes. And
the hum missing from the background, yes. I moved the microphone to a different table, so hopefully that solves it.
All right, it definitely sounds better. All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Usted probablemente ha estado en su carro buscando por coberturas de noticias o buscando alguna música nueva. O a lo mejor usted estuvo en su casa cambiando el cuadrante buscando algo diferente. Su radio probablemente se haya quedado en KPFT y permanecido allí. Si usted es un nuevo radioescucha de esta estación, esta es la manera en que la radio de la comunidad trabaja. Nosotros dependemos de radioescuchas, no de comerciantes, para obtener dinero que usamos para la operación de nuestra estación. Nosotros tenemos campañas de donaciones pocas veces al año, donde nosotros le pedimos a usted que apoye nuestro trabajo con una donación monetaria. Usted ha venido dependiendo de nosotros, pero nosotros dependemos de usted. Vaya a la página de internet www.kpft.org para hacer su donación monetaria. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and now it's time for Not Barrett Time.
Barrett Time, Not Barrett Time.
No. Hey, Barrett, what are you not doing?
I don't know.
Not doing Barrett Time.
Driving around California, looking at the Googles. All right. Well.
Bruh.
All right, well, it's the second half of Technology Bites here.
Woo-hoo!
And we're going to continue on in the same mode that we were in when we left you a few minutes ago.
Which requires callers and phone calls,
yes. All of our phone lines are open. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. We've been talking about backups and audio signals to projectors and... You know, all those things that are challenging in life. You know, we're moving offices where I work. We're having a completely new office built out for us. And it's I don't know how state-of-the-art, but it's a lot more updated than what we had before in terms of our projectors and audio systems. I forget what they're called, but we have these pods that hang over the cubicles that are noise-dampening.
Cool.
So like white noise generators, or it's kind of like noise cancellation.
Really?
Yeah, so they're going to play like white noise or something that's going to make it quieter.
It's going to sound like Pete before he fixed it.
Yeah. So they did that instead of making actual walls.
Well, they've got some of the ceilings are open. They don't have there's noise dampening tiles in some of the ceilings, but then there's also the cubicles are all half height, so you don't have that complete privacy. So I think they want to have a more open feel, so they're using this to kind of compensate for the fact that we don't have a wall blocking you from the person next to you. It looks
I've
good.
Worked in that environment, and it sucks.
What do they do to make the employees feel not comfortable about being at work?
Well, they're working up to the clear plastic jumpsuits to get rid of any kind of theft.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Well, I've been over to the new space, and I kind of like it.
Like where
they got a new job.
The officing thing where, I forgot who did this. I think Sun might have gone to this where, you know, they're like, well, a lot of these people, they're not here every day anyway because, you know, they're out in the field and everything. And so
hoteling.
We have 100 people, but maybe only 50 of them will ever be in the office at once. So we're just going to get space for 50 people, and then nobody has an assigned cube. You just bring your laptop or whatever in, and you plug it in just wherever you sit down. And so nobody can have any personal anything connected to any space.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
That's kind of horrible.
Yeah.
Co-working.
What's that?
No, what was it called?
Caroline Collective. It was the one that brought my to my tears. It was a collaborative.
Cow working.
All right. I don't know. I can't remember. Collaborative workspace. 713-526-573. I see the phones lighting up like so much of that other substance we talked about making volcanoes out of. I did find another video on the black snake, making the black snake thing. And it looks like it requires a few different ingredients and, one of them is confectioner's sugar. Let's see what it's called. It's actually called the Crazy Russian Hacker is the name of the site. Let's see what he has to say here.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Mobile Tour, where safety is number one priority. fire extinguishers close by. Kids, do not try this at home. Adult supervision. If you really want to try it, ask your parents. And we're going to do black snake science experiment. Let's check out what we're going to need. We will need powdered sugar, baking soda, sand, some kind of container, measurement spoons, mixing bowl, a lighter, and some kind of fill. You can do rubbing alcohol. I'm using the lighter fluid. Let's get to our experiment. First thing we're going to do is grab powdered sugar.
Yes, so that's the ingredients that you need to be able to make. And he actually does go through and mix all this stuff together and then lights it on fire, and it makes a big, giant black snake. So you have that to look forward to if you want to make that. It looks like you can make it out of stuff you have around your house, Flicted. I bet you have all of these ingredients except for, well, maybe the powdered sugar.
I don't think I do.
Well, I'm going to make some of this next. This looks like stuff that you don't have to find a special chemical store to buy the ingredients. All right, Groovehouse, I see that one call survived.
Yes, it did.
And they're going to be on the air with us then. Who is it?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Wow. Hey, Matthew. It sounds like he might have butt dialed us or something.
Well, I screened the call, so I talked to him. But
I believe that.
I didn't talk to his butt. I'll tell you that.
He might have had a very conversational butt.
Matthew, you're on the air.
Yes, sir.
All right.
What do you got for us?
Well, I'd like to know how do I determine my system specs on PC. So I can know if I'm meeting system requirements or something.
Well, if the computer is a name brand, is it like a Dell or an HP or something?
Yeah, it's an HP.
All right, you can always look up the model number online and go to the HP site, and they'll have the specs listed for your model number.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember the name of the software. There was a piece of software that was real popular amongst the HAL-PC type people that you could run on your computer that would tell you basically how much memory you had, how much hardware you had, how much hard drive you had, and that sort of thing. Software to determine hardware specs. But it's certainly easy to find. Like if you Google search the model, and there's a program called System Spec, and it's a free software program that will basically tell you what operating system you have, how much memory you have, what your CPU speed is, what kind of sound card you have, and so forth.
Okay. So if I wanted to just do that by checking something in the computer, would I be able to do that without, like, downloading any kind of software? Or
you can right-click.
Or going online, maybe, you know. Can I do it, like, just from within the computer? I'm sure there's a way to be able to view that.
Well, if you go find the computer icon, is it XP or Windows 7?
XP.
So if you go click on Start Menu and then find the My Computer icon and right-click it and select Properties, you should be able to bring up a dialog box. It'll tell you a little bit about your computer.
And you can search through all of that and expand all of those areas, and eventually under some of them you will find bits and pieces of that information.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But a lot of times it's nicer if you actually have a piece of software that you put on it that's specifically what it does. It will just lay out all of the specs for all the hardware it finds. And all the specifications on the hardware it finds.
Because you can quickly find out, like, what operating system you have. You can then go search around and see what size hard drive you have. But these utilities are designed to go out and collect all that data from your operating system and pool it into an easy-to-read format.
Oh, okay. So, y'all ever played MechWarrior Online?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, that's cool. I was just curious. I was just curious how you would answer that question. normally I would go, and you could just check your system properties. Like if you right click on the My Computer icon, you can bring up your device manager, and you know, and that'll usually.
It's kind of like what we just said.
And you can search through all that stuff, but But yeah. Like I said, it's easier to get if you get a custom piece of software that will collect all of that for you, so you don't have to like expand all those tabs and look through everything to find all the different specifications. It just puts it all in one place.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but I've also found that, you know, when people contact me and say, you know, they'll contact me with a problem or whatever, and they'll say, and I'll say, well, what kind of computer do you have? And I'll ask them, how much memory do you have? And then, well, how do I know that? I don't know. I mean, first of all, my first thought is, you bought the darn thing, you should know that. You should just know that information. But if you don't, a lot of times it's just easier to go online and look at the specs. Tell me the model number you have. I'll go online, find the specs for the computer, and it's all there. It tells you what the base configuration is. It tells you all the things you need to know. But like Flicked had said, these software programs that are out there that collect that information from the operating system are oftentimes very helpful. They also go further and tell you, they collect all the data, like how much hard drive space do you have free, what, you know, what updates have you got installed, and some of them go really deep and get you a lot of really good information.
But so say I was to go out and get something like that, wouldn't I have a pretty good chance of picking up some adware?
Somebody who uses the internet and is not careful runs that risk, don't they?
And there are definitely certain types of software that are going to be more likely to find those kind of things. Like if you're looking for some antivirus software, for example, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to try to inject viruses or malware by having people download what they think is antivirus,
you know,
or anti-malware.
There's people that go...
Yeah, I've seen some of it. It's like a pop-up, but it makes it look like a little, look like a Windows window, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It has a button on it that says, okay, click here now for free antivirus.
But there's also people that use their computers that decide that they're going to take it upon themselves to clean things up and uninstall necessary programs and drivers and go around and delete files they shouldn't delete. So the ability to destroy a computer does not completely hinge on being on the internet.
Or if you look in your Win32 directory and you see a program in there that's got a teddy bear for the icon, that's a virus.
Yeah,
that was a big one that went around for a long time, and everybody was deleting it. I forgot what it was. It wasn't something that destroyed your operating system when you deleted it, but it was actually a legitimate program that came with all of that OS.
So are you just testing us, or are you a computer guy yourself?
Not really so much more modern now, you know. I mean, I've built my own computers in the past, and I fixed a lot of computers for people. You know, I know something, but I'm not gonna sit here and claim to y'all that I know everything.
No,
when did you trail off? What was the last OS you were working
ship?
On? Yeah.
Really, the last OS that I deal with is XP.
That was a good time to get off.
I've helped people out with like some 7 and some Vista and stuff like that, you know. But yeah, mainly I prefer XP. That's where I kind of left off.
How far back did you go?
What was your first computer?
Probably, I'm 27, so in 95 I had, Windows 3, I think it was called 3.1, where if you press escape too many times, you'd be back at DOS. But the main one I use was Windows 95.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope that we can help you there a little bit. So appreciate your call in tonight. 713.
You got to get 95 Second Edition. So you so you've got the USB support.
And don't get ME.
You got to get Windows ME.
ME was horrible.
Oh, just get Bob.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air.
We're going to have to get KD5 to come on here so he can talk about OS2 Warp.
BIOS.
I saw the BIOS guy at the...
Dwight?
The guy with the actual BIOS.
Oh, okay.
I saw him at the Art Car Parade. He was riding around on a bicycle out there. He'll always be the BIOS guy. All right, all of our lines are currently open. If you would like to be on the air with Technology Bites, if you have a question, if you'd like to quiz us, see if we're going to tell you how to do something, you're welcome to call in. And then the internet is spotty. Are we still holding on to Pete?
I'm here. It's just cut out.
I'm also on wired instead of wireless. It might make a difference. Maybe. It
might make a difference. May or may not. My internet, my pings are coming back with lots of
timeouts. It reconnected about 4 times and seems to be back again.
But the internet has no bearing on our ability to take phone calls at 713-526-5738, so we don't have to be on the internet to actually talk to you. We have to be on the internet to answer your questions because, you know, Google. But other than that, you know, we can certainly take some calls here on the show.
If you don't have access to the internet, you can call us and ask us to Google it for you.
At which point, we're not on the internet. Man, my ping times are up like, really bad. 6,443 milliseconds.
Really?
Yeah. And then it goes into timeouts for
over
about
6 seconds?
Yeah. And, good math there. Way to go. 6 second ping times. And then it goes to timeouts for about, now it's completely down. Let me see if there's another hotspot. I'll connect to KPFT.
Yeah, we lost Mr. Hughes as well.
Yeah. The internet is, well, that's a little bit more stable. All right, good. All right, so all the lines are open. Can spend the next hour just talking to you about calling that phone number. There's Pete. He's back.
Seemed to be back.
We'll see how well that works out for us. So you were saying the new iPhone sometime in September, August?
September 19th rumor date.
The rumor date.
It better be a better advancement than the 5S was. Because I was going to get the 5S when it came out. But then after it
released... To replace what? What do you have now, the 4?
4S.
The 4S?
I had a 4... but then some friends of mine upgraded to 5s, and so they gave me a 4S. So I had a 4S I still have a 4S. I had it for several years. I was going to upgrade to the 5S, but it came out, and I was just like, there's really not anything compelling, because I'm not going to buy it on a contract. I just want to buy it full out. And, there wasn't any compelling thing about it that really made me feel like it was going to do something so much better than what I already had that made it worth $750, I think, is what when they originally came out was around what they cost, like unlocked, free and clear. And I was also thinking, I don't think I've ever paid for cable, ever. I don't think I've ever bought cable or had
it was always stolen for it. You steal it or what?
One time for a month or two, it was kind of stolen, but I didn't steal it. It just
was left on.
I bought a new TV and I plugged it into cable because I was going to try to use cable as the antenna maybe, and it had cable.
There it was.
Yep.
Just waiting for you.
All right. Well, I see a phone line ringing. We have plenty of open lines. Groovehouse is springing into action. He's sprightly, young, and eager, and he will get you in the queue to be on the air. So we have all the other lines are open. Tonight, 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites. As I mentioned earlier, we are kind of, sort of, not really celebrating. It really has been 19 years. Whether or not we're really celebrating
already,
I don't know if it's really anything we're celebrating, but it's certainly worth noting that Technology Bites has been on the air here on KPFT for 19 years. Can you believe it? I can't hardly believe it. So many operating systems, so few functional operating systems. All right, I see we have a call queued up and ready to go. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I just wanted to mention for the last caller that I like Specky, S-P-E-C-C-Y, from Puriform. It's free. They're the people that make Sea Cleaner.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, Sea Cleaner.
Formerly known as something else.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some interesting programs there, and
Puriform.
Specky gives you, like, even, you know, your drive temps and all that stuff, and it's really spot on.
Yeah, they have CCleaner for the Mac, and they have a number of different programs. And
I like their defragler as well.
It's well named. Definitely well named.
Well, I just wanted to throw it out there.
No, I appreciate the call. That's a good suggestion.
All right, thanks.
All right, yeah, so if you go to Piriform, PIRIFORM.com, or if you Google search the name of the program that he just mentioned, which I just forgot.
Specky.
Specky, S-P-E-C-C-Y. I didn't know they had a CCleaner for the Mac. I'm going to run that right now and see what it does.
Yummy junk files.
It's a registry cleaner for an operating system that has no registry.
it's also a CCleaner, so it'll empty your trash. It'll go and find files left over from installs and whatnot and get rid of those.
It lives in a pineapple.
Under the sea.
Cleaner.
All right, we're running CCleaner. I've used this program on Windows before. I mean, I'm not a big fan of registry cleaners per se, but CCleaner is pretty cool because what it does on a Windows computer is goes through and cleans out temp files and gets rid of just junk and garbage, and it will actually make some modifications to the registry that can be kind of helpful. And I'm going to click on Analyze here. So the interface looks exactly like it does, pretty much as close as they can for an app. It's funny because their logo in the upper right-hand corner is a pear.
A pear of what?
It's no. P-E-A-R, pear.
Oh.
Ah, so this is going to clear out. I'm going to, according to this, I can get rid of
all your photos?
Really, all the useful files that I have, yes.
Watch out. Be careful before you push that button.
No, I'm going to, it clears out the cache for Google Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. And trying to see if...
deletes all your cookies.
I'm only getting about right. 13 Mac.
Drinks all your milk.
I'm gonna recover the Macs are so efficient anyway. I'm gonna recover 1.1 megabytes of data space.
1.1 whole megabytes.
1.1 whole megabytes. If I did it, but I don't really want to delete my. I guess it just deletes the cache. So, I was possible to permanently delete files.
What could possibly go wrong?
Do it, Jay. Do it,
man. I always loved to test in the production environment.
Me too.
That's just the only way to live. You're not living if you're not, trying things out in real time.
I still
time.
Haven't. I've actually seen some people that had it. I was planning to buy one, but I never have. But I've seen T-shirts that say, "Real men test in production." I love that.
You haven't bought it yet?
No, I don't have one. I've got a budget.
Maybe you have it in Russian? Buy it in Russian?
No. I have one that says, "Dovrai na provrai."
In Russian. Russia production runs in you.
That's right. Comrade.
All right. All the lines are open. If you want to be on the air, we've got plenty of time.
What's the magic number, Jay?
713-526-5738.
Speak to a geek.
Speak to a real live geek.
Why wait? Call now.
We're waiting.
Tools. Let's see what the CCleaner tools has.
0.0 cents per minute.
That's kind of interesting. I don't know how much better this would be than dragging something to the trash, but the CCleaner for the Mac has it has an uninstall, so you can uninstall installed apps without having to just drag them to the trash and get rid of them. I'm not sure if that gets rid of more stuff, but I have found
there are a few programs that are even on a Mac are ugly.
Yeah.
I think the Cisco AnyConnect client, or there was some Cisco or there was a VPN client that I installed one time that just started installing files like in the root folder. It was really annoying. Like it, outside the home directory, just wherever it felt like installing it. Because normally most applications are pretty well behaved, and if it goes in the general application folder, it stays in one folder of its name.
Sometimes you got to get rid of the preferences files too. So just dragging an app to the trash won't necessarily get rid of the preferences. So if you're trying to uninstall a program and then reinstall it with the idea that that might clear up some problems if you don't get rid of the preference
files.
Yeah, the plist files.
Plist files, yeah.
I see the phone ringing. I see that
phone. I see the phone ringing.
It's ringing some of the time. Well, Groovehouse is going to go attend to the phones. So it'll be up to me and Pete on his reliable internet connection to the station to keep you entertained while we do that. You know, that's one of the joys of doing public radio is, you know, using public radio technology. Because it's not, I will tell you one thing, this station is not even close to state-of-the-art when it comes to broadcast technology. And for whatever reason, we have not been able to settle our internet here. You would think that we could get reliable internet delivered to the radio station, but for some reason we can't. I'm hoping that someday we'll actually find a new location to move this station into, get new digs with, you know, reliable wiring.
But they did get rid of the fractional T1, right?
Fractional T1. I don't know if they did or not. I tell you, it seems like they could get Comcast to come in here and deliver cable.
I think that's what they were doing. Because I think the AT&T, I think they said that this was the last location on the whatever, DSLAM or whatever. It's not DSLAM, it's the CO or something. No, yeah. CO's bigger. Whichever one it was, they were the only line left in this area. And so I think they wanted them to get off of it because they wanted to get rid of all that old hardware.
Okay, so here's the meta test that I want to use CCleaner for. So I got CCleaner up and running on the Mac. I've got it in the uninstall application section of the program.
You're going to get it to uninstall itself?
I'm going to see if it'll uninstall itself. There's no way this is going to work. I'm probably going into a black hole right now, but I just feel compelled to try it. So we're going to do it. It says, are you sure you want to uninstall CCleaner? Yes. CCleaner is running. Close it and press retry or cancel. Oh, infinite loop. No.
Mac?
Huh?
On your Mac?
Yeah. I knew there was no way it could uninstall itself because it had to terminate the program. It can't kill its own running application and then do the thing that you asked it to do.
It can only get so far.
You know, that's the next breakthrough we need to make in computers is somehow to have self-terminating applications.
Or at least have somebody coded in there so that when you tell it to do that, it comes back with some, you know, pithy comment about what you tried to do.
Yeah. It should ridicule you for doing something so lame and ridiculous like I just tried. I mean, I'm lame and ridiculous, but I don't have a problem with that. All right, Groovehouse, yes. I see we have someone in the queue.
Yes, we do.
We have open lines if you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738. We've got all the lines are open, but we do have one call in the queue, which we're going to go to. Groovehouse, who is it?
It is Tony.
Tony, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
All right. Hit the daddy.
That's right.
Yeah, right. So I've got an OS.
Not the mama.
10.5.8.
Oh, you have what?
A Macintosh running 10.5.8.
Okay.
And when I boot up, at the first boot up, the icons for all the different folders and applications are the old kind of app icons, and then one at a time, dotted, knotted like left to right or top to bottom, just indiscriminately across the screen, pow, 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 they start changing into the current icon. And sometimes it takes a minute or more for all of them to finish converting. And the lag time last night, I was on the internet through Safari and had about six windows open. And one of them was Alex, what's his name? Alex Jones. And boy, right after that, everything started really going slow. It took 20 or 30 seconds that the screen would sort of, that window would not do anything. And then I would click to another window and I'd get the spinning beach ball. And then finally I just quit Safari, turned off the machine. rebooted and went back in, and it was going normal speed then.
Sounds like a false flag to me.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while, yeah, some program, I mean, I've had different programs do whatever, you know, hit some fault that causes them to consume system resources and slow down the system and cause beach ball. I mean, I've had Chrome, actually today I had Chrome do that. I have no idea what I did, but, and I've had way more tabs open in Chrome than I had at that point in time, but something happened in Chrome, actually in all of Chrome beach balled. Like, normally it doesn't do that. So very few times I've ever seen Chrome do it, but yeah, every once in a while that happens where some program just loses its mind.
All those little ads and things along the right side of the screen or the top of the screen that have motion in them,
yeah,
those take up resources, right?
Yeah. If I was, you know, what I find to be very helpful in my my browsing experience is using Chrome, and I use AdBlock plugin.
AdBlock is nice.
AdBlock will block all of that sidebar content, those ads and stuff, in any website that you're visiting.
So let's see here. I could probably put Chrome on here, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's what I know. You said the number version, but remind me if you know whether that's a leopard or a lion or a snow leopard or whatever.
No.
What is it? 10 dot what?
10.5.8.
5, I think, was tiger.
Tiger. That sounds right, because they used to call me Tony the Tiger, and I think I kind of tried to remember it from that.
So Chrome on tiger.
AdBar, what was it called? AdBar what?
It's called AdBlock.
AdBlock?
AdBlock. Yeah, it's a plug-in for Chrome. But let's see.
Although I think they make it for Firefox also, and maybe.
I don't think there is a Chrome for Tiger. But Tiger's 10.4.
Oh. 5 must be Leopard then.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, 10.5 is Leopard. So, Chrome.
Okay, yeah, well, it's 10.5.8.
Yeah. So there are older versions of Chrome available for the Mac that you can get, and you could try it. It might enhance your experience. You could also try that CCleaner program we just tried to clear out your internet.
Are you on your 10? Are you on 10.5 because it's a PowerPC Mac?
It's an iMac.
Is it a power? It's an iMac with an Intel processor.
1.8 gigahertz PowerPC G5.
PowerPC, okay.
Yeah, because that Leopard was the last one that would run on PowerPC.
So does that mean I'm probably Leopard?
Yeah. It means you're Leopard out.
You're as far as you can go in terms of operating systems. You can't upgrade. But if you do have an older...
Although... You can go download Ubuntu, because Ubuntu makes a PowerPC version of Ubuntu. If you don't want to run Mac OS anymore. And then you could actually get it would be a more modern operating system.
Although, we're going to wait till I get another Mac instead of doing a bunch of internal.
Well, after you get the new Mac, then go back and install Ubuntu on this one.
Yeah, like I said, I can't quite keep up with the internals like I used to. I'm getting a little bit better, but. I'll wait till I get a newer computer to step off into that stuff. I'm just going to leave everything as it is, because if I change anything and something happens, I'm just virtually lost. And it's a business computer. I got to make sure that it stays put. So the beginning question was about the icons booting. When I boot up, them changing from the old type to the new type, and it seems like some sort of lag deal is causing that. Because some of the times,
do you have a bunch of icons?
40 or 50 icons laying on the desktop, the screen will come up and it'll just go boom, everything's ready to roll. Sometimes it'll be the old stuff and they'll start dotting it out one at a time across the board, back and forth.
One of the things you might want to do is reduce the number of icons you have on your desktop.
Yeah, I put 100 on the desktop and did it on purpose as a test. And some of the times when I would boot up, everything would just pop right into instant readiness as soon as the final screen
came up. One of the things that I've seen that helps sometimes with that kind of issue is clearing your icon cache.
I think it has something to do with...
I've never heard of an icon cache.
With the spotlight stuff and the preview stuff, I think. Because, I have that problem now on my Mac desktop, and it's I can't remember if I upgraded to Mavericks or if I'm still on. I don't think I upgraded to Mavericks. So I'm on 10.8, I think. And mine does that also. I mean, when I start it up, I've got probably 100 or more icons on my desktop. And a lot of times it'll start up and it'll have the generic icon, and then I can actually see it rolling through and building the icon based on it looking at the content inside of each file and building a little icon preview image of the first page or whatever.
Well, all operating systems, the Mac operating system as well as the Windows operating system, builds an icon cache on the system so that icons can be rendered more quickly when the screen goes to the whatever is going to show you the icons, whether you open a folder and you have thumbnails there or whatever. So if you Google search icon cache the Mac, icon cache Mac, there's some tools you can use. I mean, there's some command lines you can run that will clear the cache and force the system to rebuild your icon cache. So you might have a faulty or corrupted icon cache that has information that's no longer relevant to your current icon layout. So if you rebuild the cache,
maybe it's not able to wipe it to build a new one.
Yes, if you wipe out, if you delete your icon cache, then it'll rebuild that from scratch, and that might clear that problem up.
Okay.
So you'll have to.
And then the other thing that guy was saying earlier about wanting to be able to back up offsite and putting a not so good looking hard drive into a closet so people would look at it and go, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Well, a terabyte being under $100, the idea is if someone was going to steal your hard drive to get the data off of it, like some clients that you had that you had notes about that only you knew, and they were going to steal it, so it was business espionage or whatever. If you put it in the cloud, it's out there, and some kid that's getting paid minimum wage is going to have access to your files, whether you like it or not, and whether any of the
I don't think people, the person was necessarily worried about someone stealing it to get the data. They were thinking that they might steal it just because it's on the table with the computer and it's shiny and it's an electronic, and let's get that too because we might be able to get a.
Oh, yeah, okay, because it's part of the package.
Right. It's just I'm going to steal everything here and take it to the pawn shop.
Get some cash for it.
Get some cash for it.
And he doesn't care about the fact that it's, like all your photos of your child for the last 47 years.
He was more worried about the point that he was making, and it's a valid one, is that if you're storing your backup in the same place you store your computer, whatever disaster befalls your computer has the potential to befall your backup as well. So if it gets flooded or burned or stolen, not necessarily corporate espionage.
But yeah, or zapped by lightning.
Yeah. Although I'm not overly concerned. Maybe that's the next wave of things we're going to hear about is people somehow hacking Dropbox or something. But could you imagine trying to find anything useful looking through the cloud storage? I mean, that, you talk about big data. So, like, if I have the ability to hack into the servers that hold all the data from all the people who use cloud backup for one particular service, I'm hoping, and I believe this is probably true, that they have at least some kind of intrusion detection going on. But the reality is somebody going and finding my, W-2 forms or whatever in my cloud storage and getting my social security number, I think, is pretty low. Even scanning a hard drive they stole from me.
Well, they just find whatever they found, and maybe they would know that it was worth something, and maybe they wouldn't,
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, protect your data as best
you can. Yeah, I don't have a good backup operation, and even though it is a business deal, I've always decided that if it crashes, I just start over again.
Did 10.5 have a time machine I can't remember
Let me see here. Is that what this
I can't remember when they first put Time Machine.
Yeah, I've got a Time Machine icon on my dock.
Time Machine's really nice. I mean, all you do is hook up a drive, tell it you want it, to use it as a Time Machine backup, and it'll just automatically start backing up your stuff every... It makes a full backup, which could take a while, up to even a day or two, depending on how big your and your hard drive is. But once that happens, it just does incrementals every once in a while. It's invisible to you, and if something does catastrophic happens to your system, you've got the entire OS and all of your data on that Time Machine backup drive, and you can actually just take that, plug it into a new Mac, and when you boot up the new Mac, tell it you want to restore off the Time Machine backup, and it'll pull all your data off.
Yeah, I think I had it running when I was before I pulled out of my office and moved back into my house, and I thought that while I was doing typesetting in Quark, there were several times when it would slow down, and it was because the dadgum thing was backing up every, not every few seconds, but dang sure not once an hour. It was backing up often. So is there a setting that you can tell how often to back up?
I'm not aware that actually that they give you that level of control. Maybe you, from the command line or something, you can go in and set that. But
I don't think you can. Yeah.
Well,
I did some command line a few years ago when I was thinking clearly, and it was doable. But right now, it's not doable.
You call him from Colorado.
One way you can control how often your system backs up to a hard drive and on the Mac is you can always just turn the hard drive off or disconnect it, and it won't back
okay,
up.
Okay, so then if you do that, next time you hook it up, what happens? Does it realize that on Thursday 2 weeks ago was the last backup and it starts doing it?
Yes.
Yes.
Because I do that with my laptop right now. Because I use a Time Machine drive that's hooked up to my desktop, and whenever my laptop gets onto wireless, which doesn't happen all the time because I don't use it at home all that often, once it gets on the network, it'll see that Time Machine drive's there, and it'll start doing all the backups that it saved to itself for the last how many ever days since it last did it.
Okay, and then another issue that I had with doing that in the first place was that these incremental backups, it's not like taking a folder and putting everything in it and then dragging it across to a hard drive. That's like the initial backup. But then all the incrementals are all dated, and you click on it, and there's a bunch of folders stacked on top of each other that have different dates going off into the distance.
Right.
Okay, and if I wanted to pull out a specific file, I didn't think that you could do that.
Yeah,
wanted to do a restore, you can do a restore.
You can use the Time Machine interface to go back to, you know, last Thursday, and it'll show you your desktop for last Thursday, and then you can drill down into the folders that are
in the view and get
a specific file.
Yes.
You can, okay.
You can actually open up the backup and go to the date that you want and get the version of the file that you want.
And then it knows where to go in the incremental versus full backups to get that specific file out of itself. It's just giving you a pretty interface so that you don't know that it's actually going to, you know, the fifth last incremental backup or the, you know, all the way back to the last full backup it did. You don't know that.
Okay. So then on my big hard drive that I had that on in the office, I might be able to go back in there and pull a QuickBooks file out from 3 years ago.
Depends on how far back your incrementals go, because, you know, depending on the hard drive space, it will start to overwrite the older ones.
Yeah, yeah, at some point it will.
It's a terabyte hard drive, but I only used it for less than 6 months. And then I moved out of the office, and at the point where I moved it out of the office, it just became a dummy hard drive. So the backup portion of it should be pristine, right? I mean, it should still be intact.
It might be, yeah. If you didn't,
I haven't put very much on it. It's a gigantic hard drive.
Okay.
If you didn't wipe it or do anything with it, it's possible that if you hooked it back up to your machine, it might still see it as a Time Machine drive and see that there's a Time Machine formatted files and or directory structure in it.
Okay, and this smaller hard drive I've got says it has 573 gigs available, and I'm looking at get info on my Mac trying to figure out how big my hard drive is in this computer. So where does it say how big my hard drive is? We've got ATA, it's is that
on the Mac?
Oh, that's the bus.
If you go on the Mac, if it's the same as on the more modern versions, if you just go to About This Mac and then More right. Info.
And then what?
More Info.
Right.
And then System Report.
Okay, System Report. Well, I don't see System Report.
I don't know in that version.
Or if you have the icon for the hard drive on your desktop,
you can right click.
If you right click on it and do get info, it will show you the capacity and available.
Oh yeah, okay. Click there and you'll get info. I have a single button mouse.
Hold down the control button
get
when
info
you click.
Says it's 48 gigs are used on the disk. The capacity is 148.
Okay.
So 500. Oh, yeah, this will fit on there a couple of times over.
Yep.
So I can just go ahead and start using this hard drive, this external hard drive, as a backup for a Time Machine and leave that other one over on the other computer that it's on.
Yep, sounds
that's
like it.
Great.
All right.
All right, well, that does about as much as I can probably keep in my mind and on these notes that I've taken here before I start getting too scattered.
All right. Well, appreciate your call. I'm glad we could help.
All right, and don't forget, it's hit the daddy. Got to love the baby. Love the baby. Love the baby.
Not the mama.
Bye.
All right, thanks for your call. Bye.
And for those who don't remember the reference, it's referring to...
There was that sitcom that was about the dinosaur family.
Okay.
And the baby.
Dinosaurs, yeah.
Yeah, dinosaurs. It was called Dinosaurs. Which is what we are.
The woman who did the voice of the mother dinosaur is probably more famous for being the mother on Arrested Development.
Ah.
Really? And also the mother on Archer.
Nice.
Archer's mom.
That's more obvious since the character kind of looks like her.
Yeah, of course. All right, 713-526-5738. Let's see. God, Dinosaurs ran for 3 years. 1991 to 1994. It seems like it's older than that, I would have thought.
It's older than our show.
Yeah, but I don't remember. I think in the 90s I might have been an adult. I was watching this show. What was wrong with me? I don't know.
Well, it was, wasn't it from the studios of Jim Henson, Frank Oz? Didn't have some connection with
them? I don't know if they
were
involved or not.
I thought they did. I thought that's what drew me to it.
You were probably still wearing your Where's the Beef t-shirt, though, so...
How in the hell could this have happened? Oh, God. Oh, God.
I'm the baby, brand new, just out. Gotta love me. Come on, gotta love me.
Yeah, it was brilliant television. Brilliant, I tell you.
Gotta love me.
It had a lot of catchphrases for its time. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, I see we have a call in the queue now because Groovehouse did his part.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the voice of the baby, that guy got a lot more famous.
Tell me more, Pete.
As the voice of Elmo.
Huh.
Think about it and listen to him.
How about
his name's
that?
Kevin Clash.
Oh, come on, get to dialogue here. Oh, well. This video is no good.
It was that Jim Henson Productions did have something to do with the production of the series.
I'm sure it had probably a lot to do with my fascination with Dark Crystal as well.
Skeksis.
All right, Groove House.
Yes, Gelfling.
What shall I do for you?
That's how you're going to talk on the air forever now.
We actually, when I was a kid, we watched that movie, and then we went and got a dog, and we named it Fizzgig.
Oh, poor dog.
How did Fizzgig make out in life?
It was annoying.
Got run over by a car.
Mercifully run over. All right, Groove House.
SJ.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the...
Good I guess it's Time Machine Night. I have an iMac 2009 where the hard drive crashed, and so I put in a new hard drive, I think after reading one of your guys' columns in the Herald about it. Went pretty well. I had to take it to the store to have them reinstall the software because it wouldn't read the DVD player for some reason. But I like the way the software is running, so my question is, I don't want to reinstall Time Machine because I have Time Machine running on a backup. But what I just want to do is pull the files off of it, mainly just the pictures I have, and put it back on the hard drive and go from there. So can I do that, and then can I just start Time Machine again without causing any screw-ups by using the same hard drive, the backup?
Well, you should be able to open up Time Machine on the Mac and then select the drive that you want to use as your backup drive. So you have an option that says select disk, and then that takes a look at the disks that are connected, and then you can choose the disk. And from there, you should be able to, you know, not have the you don't have to have Time Machine turned on, so it won't make any backups to it. You turn off automatic backups, select disk, choose that disk, and then you should be able to go into that archive and pull out the files that you want. And then at that point, is it the same computer, or is it that you restored from that backup already, or what are you going to be doing backing up going forward? You need a clean backup, or you want to try to append the existing backup?
No, what I'd like to do is just pull off the files I want from that backup, put it on this computer, and then basically, I guess, start over again with Time Machine from this moment on going forward and get rid of the old ones.
So you can do that. Connect the hard drive, select the disk as your Time Machine disk, go and get all the files that you want, and then you can erase the disk and then reconnect it and then tell Time Machine to use that as your backup and turn on the automatic backups, and off you go.
Okay. I should erase the disk before I start up the Time Machine again.
You might want to do that just to have it nice and clean, ready to go. And a lot of times what will happen is that when you go through the disk utility and you erase the disk, the external hard drive, then Time Machine sometimes will kick up automatically and say, hey, do you want to use this as your Time Machine? And it takes you through the process so you don't even have to do it manually.
Okay. I'll try that. Got time for one more quick question again?
Sure.
The DVD, as I said, when I put the new hard drive in, it wouldn't read my backup CD, so I had to go to the Apple store and they had to reinstall it off their network. And I thought everything was fine, but I've been trying to play DVDs in it, and for some reason it spins and runs, but it acts like it can't read it anymore. Is it a software glitch, you think, or hardware, or too little information to be able to help me?
Well, I mean, you're talking about you had the system, you had a problem, you couldn't use the CD to reinstall the operating system, so you took it to the Apple Store. They did a network reinstall of the operating system and got it back up and running. So you've got a clean install of the operating system, and you still can't read your disks or your CD disks. It sounds to me like you have a hardware issue.
Okay.
It sounds to me like the drive is either bad or maybe it needs to be cleaned or something.
Okay. Is that a big deal to replace it?
What kind of...
It's an iMac, right?
Yeah, iMac 2009. I just replaced the hard drive in it, which was pretty straightforward.
Replacing the CD-DVD is going to be tough.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Your better bet might be to go ahead and get an external that get, what is it? What's the Mac CD DVD player? Is it a Super Drive?
Super Drive.
Super Drive.
Okay.
But you can get just about any external USB, you know, CD or DVD burner or DVD drive and connect it up and have that available to you.
Okay, just kind of bypass it like an
appendix. Yeah, just skip it because the Mac will also, you know, the Mac will boot. Because like my MacBook Air doesn't even have a DVD drive, but if I connected one to it and I had an operating system disk in there, I could boot from that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
All right, guys, thanks a lot for the help.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thanks, bye.
All right, well, we got about 6 minutes, 5.5 minutes, 5 minutes and 28 seconds, more or less. A couple of minutes, but we have to kill before we can play the outro music and get the heck out of here. But it's been a good show. We do appreciate everybody calling in and participating. We've given out, you know, good information on pyrotechnics.
Don't burn the house down, please.
Don't burn the house down. Unless you have a fireproof external hard drive with all your data backed up.
That's good insurance policy.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's good insurance. Good insurance won't replace your data, though.
That's true.
Unless your insurance is, you know, a backup to the cloud. That's insurance in its own way. It's not a financial insurance.
True.
Right?
Yes.
Do you agree?
I agree.
You concur?
I concur.
You concur. Well, hopefully next week we'll have Barrett back, and he'll have Google stories for us. As it is right now, he's updating his Facebook with pictures of Fry's Electronics and a British flag with a TARDIS on it. So,
but Fry's Electronics is here. That's not...
Yeah, but he said he couldn't...
He
could
not stop.
Yeah.
He couldn't not...
Maybe it was the first one ever.
Maybe he needed to replace a phone. Maybe it was. Maybe it was the birthplace of Fry's Electronics.
Or, like you said, he needed to replace a phone.
He broke a keyboard on his laptop.
I couldn't not stop because I... broke everything I had.
He's got to completely replace all of his hardware, and he was hoping maybe they also sold motorcycles.
They might.
They might. You just never.
The first one.
The first Fry's. You think they have a motorcycle section?
Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Well, how come it looks like to me like there's less than 4 minutes left?
Because there are less than 4 minutes left.
Oh.
Yeah.
But the outro is only what, 2 minutes? I thought it was 4 minutes.
No, we do it for...
3.5?
56:30. Yeah, minute and a half.
We try to get out by 58?
Yep.
So that
because we need 2 minutes for the...
promos.
Yeah.
This is the secret underside or the backstory for the radio show here on the radio station. All right, well, it has been a good show. It's been a lot of fun. Sporadic Pete has been sporadic. But the hum is gone. So that's good.
But the hummus is still around.
Hummus. It goes straight
to bread.
Hummus Among Us.
There's a hummus among us. All right. Geek Gathering is a week from Friday, so keep that in mind.
4th of July.
4th of July, Friday. Blowing stuff up. All right. So you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And he's...
Groove House.
And he's...
Groove House.
Not the bomb. Not the bomb.
You might think of your vehicle as nothing more than a junk car, but it can help bring joy into the lives of others. We offer a convenient alternative to selling or trading in your automobile, and we accept all vehicles, whether they are running or not. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Our experienced representatives are available at any time by calling 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visiting kpft.org. Either way, it's easy, and you will be contacted within 24 hours of the next business day. to arrange for pickup. Thank you for supporting 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Jumpstart your weekend and get your groove on at Discovery Green during the Thursday Concert Series presented by UHD. Enjoy free concerts showcasing dynamic entertainers from Texas and the Gulf Coast. The series finale for the Spring 2014 Discovery Green Thursday Concert Series is on Thursday, June 26th and features Houston's own Archie Bell, Mr. Tighten Up himself, joined by Barbara Lynn from Beaumont, Texas. Archie hit the number one spot on the charts in 1968 while teaching the world to tighten up, and Barbara stormed the charts in 1962 with her signature hit, You'll Lose a Good Thing. Attention St. Arnold fans, this concert features recycling of empty 6, 12, 24-pack carriers for St. Arnold. Bring your empty carriers to the park and double your reward points from St. Arnold Brewing Company. Concerts begin at 6:30. Most street parking is free starting at 6:30.